Some called them gangsters. Others called them the mob or the mafia. There were names like Capone, Anastasia, Madden. They all came to Hot Springs. The rich history of the criminal element in this episode of Hot Springs This Week.
Hot Springs This Week. A look at things to do and people to meet in Hot Springs, America's first resort.
Hi, and welcome to Episode 7 of Hot Springs This Week. Every week, we talk about things you can enjoy here in America's first resort. And as you'll hear in a moment, even America's most wanted enjoyed what Hot Springs had to offer. Thanks for subscribing to our podcast. Whether you're on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Anchor, whatever the platform, thanks for listening. And thanks for your reviews. Thanks for sharing this podcast with others. We'll have our regular conversation with Jennifer Bailey about things you can do during your upcoming visit to Hot Springs in a moment, along with our regular update from Entergy Hydro about the lakes and the rivers. But first, let's meet Robert Raines. Years ago, he opened the first ever gangster museum here in Hot Springs. It's downtown on Central Avenue across from Bathhouse Row. He's authored a book full of historical photos called Hot Springs from Capone to Costello. The attraction? Well, Rain says Hot Springs was about the only place those notorious criminals could step away from their life of crime and vacation. So they came to Hot Springs, and it turned out there was a lot more to enjoy than just the thermal waters. I went to the Gangster Museum for this visit with Robert Raines. Robert, there's so much history in Hot Springs about gangsters and mobs and all of that. When you start talking about the names, what are the biggest names that come to mind that enjoyed Hot Springs?
Well, if you get out of the Western days, then you're probably talking Johnny Torrio, Al Capone as a young lieutenant of Johnny Torrio's. And then you kind of move on up into the Lucianos and the Costellos and the Siegels and the Mickey Cohens and, of course, Owen Madden, who moved here in the early 30s. And most of the New York, Miami, Carlos Marcello from New Orleans, the Capone outfit, most of those guys came here after Madden. That's when we really started getting populated with heavyweights. I think they were just here on vacation. I mean, they would pass information because everyone was being wiretapped, and they could pass some direct information, but this just became a hub for family reunions, even those kinds of families.
The legend about Hot Springs and mobsters is that this was neutral territory. No matter what family you were employed by or ahead of, you could come here without fear of violence. Is that true?
I think that is true. I don't think it was necessarily somebody met them at the city limits and said, "All right, boys, no guns allowed." It's just a place to relax. And as Meyer Lansky's grandson says on one of our videos, it was a great place to get together, do a little business, and the town prospered because of it.
When you say do a little business, did mobsters cut deals here like they might cut on the golf course at home, or was it business that was done here in Hot Springs?
No, it was business in other places that they would just get together and agree on here. I don't think, except for Frank Costello and Madden, who, you know, had a piece of a couple of different things here, mostly hotels and a club and a restaurant. Other than that, they really had nothing to do with the rackets. I mean, Costello was the slot machine king of the United States. He had more slot machines in more places in the United States than any other company. And at the same time, he and Lansky also owned Wurlitzer jukeboxes at one time. So it became Wurlitzer, but their original company that became Wurlitzer, which led to the whole connection about Frank Sinatra being entangled with the mob because they loved Frank Sinatra when they got older, and he was the only crooner on the jukeboxes. So people thought he had paid them or they had paid him or whatever. And in fact, it was just that they liked his voice, and he was their favorite singer.
So you really can't talk about crime bosses in Hot Springs without talking about Madden. You mentioned him a couple of times already. So tell the Madden story so we put all that in context.
Well, Madden was born in 1891, Leeds, England, of Irish parents. Madden told Clay White, who was our resident field FBI agent here for 26 years, and then I think he was sheriff for 16, and he was a U.S. Marshal till the day he died, which is a few years ago. But Clay said that Madden told him when he was 15 that he hit a guy in the head. He needed to get some money. So he saw a guy walking down the street, looked like he had some money, hit him in the head when he got out of his car with a big stick, knocked him out, and took his money and ran down the street. And when he got home, he gave the money to his aunt to let her dole it out a little bit at a time, like an allowance, to his apartment so that his mother wouldn't know. Somehow or other, he came up with $500 in 1909.
Huge amount of money back
then. Oh, my gosh, yeah. So he had some compassion and some conscience to him. But sometime after that, when he started working for politicians as muscle, to get votes, he got pretty mean. So in 1914, he went to prison for killing Patsy Doyle, another big Irish mobster. Madden had a bad habit, according to Doyle, of hanging out with Italians and Jews, which happened to be Meyer Lansky, Francisco Castiglia, Frank Costello, Salvatore Lucania, which is Lucky Luciano, Ben Siegel, Dutch Schultz, Jews and Italians. And the Irish didn't like that because that group of people looked at them as second-rate people. And so they just didn't respect them at all. And the feeling was pretty mutual. So anyway, Madden went to prison for manslaughter, got out in 9 years. And in 1923, he got out of Sing Sing, went to work for Big Bill Dwyer, who was a club owner, and started getting his feet wet at the age of about 17 of how to run a club, got involved with Texas Guinan, took over the Cotton Club. Then he really started cooking. And at that time, Luciano was coming up, becoming a boss of his neighborhood. Lansky was doing the books. Costello was a little bit older than Luciano. Costello and Madden were the oldest of the group. And they were just great friends and just hung out together. And between them, they started learning how to control the politicians. And once they did that, that controlled the police. And the rest was history after that. And so Madden brought that mentality down here.
What caused him to come to Hot Springs?
When he did a year for parole violation from that earlier manslaughter charge in 1931, and in 32 he got out of prison, but Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, was governor of New York, and Thomas Dewey was attorney general. Roosevelt would not let him stay and come back to New York. So essentially there was a lot of, you know, nomenclature about the only man ever exiled in America. And Dutch Schultz was telling him about a gal, as they wrote about. So when he got out of Sing Sing, he came down here. When he got here, he was pretty quiet at first, and then gradually met Q. Byram Hurst, senior. Q. Byram became a really, really close friend of his. And together, they kind of evolved, and with that evolution, the city began to prosper because it became a little more organized. Hot Springs has always had its own little racket that they would call the partnership, a lot of them would call.
You're back in the 30s now.
Yeah, but more in the sense of they didn't stick with the consensus, is that we're all going to stick together, and, you know, that's the only way we can make this work. They tried to keep games clean and, you know, not cheat, because it was their impression that more people have bad luck than good luck. And that's kind of a thing that transferred to Vegas. Most of the Vegas hardliners were here first. Biddy Binion, Murph Harrell, a lot of those big-time gamblers were here first. There's a great statistic, a census, as a matter of fact. In 1931, Las Vegas had 5,000 people in it. They had no water yet, because all 5,000 of those people were building then Boulder Dam, became the Hoover Dam after President Hoover. And the same year, Hot Springs had 22 high-rise hotels, open gambling, and 20,500 people. So this place was already rocking way before Las Vegas even rolled its first paradise. So
So Madden, as I recall, actually had a gambling wire. That wasn't that his business here?
He did. That was his business, and it wasn't federally against the law. And so Madden would really have results of sporting events before anybody else would. So kind of much like they did in the Sting, they could reenact races and reenact finishes.
So Madden comes down here and has the wire. Gambling was wide open in Hot Springs
at
the time.
Well, essentially what we call the sports book now. Little piece of history, you know, our town was run by a judge, Ledgerwood, municipal judge, and Leo McLaughlin, a mayor for 20 years. They were in power here.
And what would the time frame have been of that?
In 1927 to 1947. And Madden got along with them and actually tried to help them until the chief of police and the chief of detectives started a little car impounding scheme. I mean, the gamblers would call the police and say, my car's been stolen. Only winners, by the way. And so they'd send somebody out there, and pretty soon Dutch Akers or Joe Wicklin, the chief of police, would come and say, look, we have this happen a lot here. So the best way to deal with this is let's just pay them what they want. It's not stolen. They're really just holding it for ransom. How much do they want? $500 usually gets the car back. And eventually they went to prison for that racket, but they were holding the cars. And so they were just making $500 every time they could spot a winner at the tables. And Madden didn't like that. He didn't like that kind of cheesy, cheap car hustling.
So Madden didn't like the attention.
Madden did not like Hoover looking at Hot Springs. You know, we've introduced Madden to probably close to 500,000 people that had never heard his name, including a lot of people in Arkansas.
He owned the Cotton Club in New York at one time, didn't he? Or did he just
operate it? No, he owned the Cotton Club, the Stork Club, the Phoenix Brewery, Broadway, essential in starting Broadway. There was just a mob museum blog out that talked about Madden gave Barbara Steinwick her start in Hollywood because she had been a performer at the Cotton Club and on New York Broadway, and he kind of ran everything up there. He gave George Raft his start. He was kind of got Ben Siegel excited about going to Hollywood. Ben Siegel supposedly modeled the Flamingo after the back window casino overlooking the pool at the former Majestic. So, you know, these guys came down here and they got ideas and they took them west and tried to make them work. And, of course, in Siegel's case, it didn't really turn out okay. But, you know, he got into some other nasty business that got him in trouble. If he just stayed here, he'd been fine.
So when the Chicago gangsters, the New York gangsters came to Hot Springs, it was ostensibly on vacation. Hmm. Was there any connection to Madden? Did they know each other? Did they hang around together? Or were they literally here to be
no, they
on
all,
their own?
Every book, every biography written by any mobster or any mobster's lawyer talks about eating with Madden, pulling jokes on Madden when they were here. The Arlington became kind of the flagship of where things started, at least, as far as conversation and let's get together and go to the races. It all started at the Arlington or the Majestic or the Eastman, which was a giant hotel. So this was a really tiny area, but it was packed with every different culture of people you could do it. Blacks, Jews, Germans, Irish. It's just a lot of different kinds of people here that got along. It was just a resort. I mean, New York Times called it America's first resort way back, you know, in the early 20s. And
Robert, what brought those gangsters here from New York and Chicago originally? Was it the hot water?
I think it was the hot water. It was the really good moonshine that they cooked up here using the mineral water as a, you know, part of the elixir. It's just, it was nice to come someplace they didn't own anything. I think I used the word before, it was a cosmopolitan hole in the wall. You know, you had bank robbers here, you had mobsters here, and then you had opera and follies, and you had an abundance of churches. I think you and I talked about one time, the Assemblies of God began here in 1914. I mean, it's just so many different cultures. It was just a great place to be because none of their rivals owned anything. They knew that because they didn't own anything. So there just wasn't any rub anywhere. Yeah.
So what would a typical week be like in Hot Springs back in the 30s and 40s when the gangsters are here? Were they isolated from each other, or did they hang out together?
The rivals did not hang out together, but there was a lot to do. Spring training baseball was going on here. The racetrack was going on. There's a lot of things spread out, fishing, hunting. I mean, it was a lot of things to spread you out here. A lot of horseback riding, a lot of equine activity. While they were here, they didn't really care about the other guys, their enemies. They just didn't even think about it. They knew the cops had their back, and they had the other guys' back, too. So it was just, they were neutralized, not because I think they just considered it neutral ground. It's just because Hot Springs was in such control of itself that there wasn't any way for them to get in. And plenty of people tried. Torrio wanted to move here. The governor wouldn't let him. Ralph Capone made an offer and was going to have what was now called a secondhand ranch for old racehorses, and they wouldn't let the deal go through. No, he would have moved here. May and Sonny Capone wanted to move here, and they wouldn't let them. Frank Costello, they actually wanted him to move here, or they wanted him to run the gambling in the 50s, and he is retired from the mob. He came down here twice a year. And I guess the last person that I know that wanted to move here was Albert Anastasia, because it was in the Sentinel Record, the hitman for the mafia. 50 or 51 wanted to move here, and Judge Floyd Huff refused to let him. And when he puts a mandate out like that, that means there's no place is going to rent to him or lease to him. And then 6 years later, of course, he was gunned down in New York.
You've referenced all the FBI files. So with all the gangsters here in that time frame, the FBI must have had a big presence here keeping up with those guys.
I know they did have a big presence here. Clay talks about that in his book. But moreover, they made connections with people here. In the case of Madden's files, for about, I guess it was 30 years, there were seven or eight people, because in the files it just refers to them as a number, like number one. Number two went to the Maurice bathhouse. Madden visited with Billy Maurice because they were friends from New York. You know, Madden seemed to have had connections here. In 1963, when Madden closed his wire service here, because Bobby Kennedy got into it with Jimmy Hoffa, and Jimmy Hoffa's second seat counsel was Q. Barmhurst Sr. against the government and won. Bobby Kennedy got the Telecommunications Act passed, which made it illegal for you to do anything over a telephone wire. So that pretty much shut down Madden, and he said, I'm not going back to prison. We'll just close this thing up. So, and he did.
Well, were all the gangsters here in Hot Springs and the gambling and the clubs and did that become, in essence, an industry like spring training was an industry here earlier?
Well, they were both going at the same time. I mean, the great baseball historians that are in Larry Foley's First Boys of Springs talk about they could go to the clubs, they could gamble, and then they could boil it out, they called it, in the morning and go play baseball. And that was one of the attractions for guys from New York and Chicago. And their teams were practicing here. And they could just walk out and sit in the bleachers and watch them. You know, they see something they really like. When they got back to New York, they could bet on them when the real season started. How that all worked, I don't think anybody knows. Mike Dugan probably knows better than anybody because his dad and granddad were involved in baseball so heavily.
So spring training was part of the attraction for the gangsters.
I think so, yeah.
And then when spring training left Arkansas, the gangsters stayed.
Right, yeah, they just stay on and, you know, have a little more time to do what they really wanted to do, which is gamble. And there was a lot of prostitution here, too. You know, we had at least three or four really outwardly expressive madams here who competed, really. There was a room where Spencer's Corner is now called the Pigley Room. I mean, everybody here knew about it. And, of course, later on you had Maxine. And Maxine would drive girls up and down the street in the back of her Cadillac, was doing what she called advertising when she got some new girls in town. So I mean, you just go up and down Central Avenue and parade them. You know, come on over to Maxine's. I got some new girls. You know, pretty bizarre. She finally went to jail for that because she violated the Mann Act by bragging that some of her girls were from Oklahoma and Louisiana and brought them across state lines.
What caused the gangsters to eventually stop coming?
I think the fact that Madden died in 65. Meyer Lansky kept coming here because Levi Hospital and he really liked the Levi Hospital. Frank Costello still came here because he still liked the horse races and liked the ambiance of Oaklawn Park. And I think Ralph Costello kept coming in, on into the 70s, but gradually most of those guys retired kind of like Madden did before they got killed. Even though gambling closed in 1967, there was still a game, backroom game going on at a lot of different places. So they could still do that, but it wasn't as fun as it was. And by then, the 60s, Vegas was cooking pretty good.
Walk through the Gangster Museum, trying to take us on a little ear tour, if you will. You've got different galleries. What are we going to see in the different galleries?
We start out with McLaughlin and Ledgerwood and Q Byram and Sid McMath, who was the first real honest city attorney here, I guess you'd call him, and later became governor. You get set up by the political foundation, and then there's a lot of course, pictures of buildings that were built pre-1900 that are still standing.
But those are the guys you just mentioned who controlled Hot Springs in that day.
Yeah, 27 to 47, they completely controlled it until the GIs got back from the war, decided that Leo had to go, and then about a year later, they decided, well, you know, when he goes, we're going to still have to do something about gambling. And so they figured out it was the only real tourist attraction here that was bringing people downtown, so they just kept going and made it get bigger, and that's when Madden got a little bit stronger. Because he kind of became the architect of how to make it work, like he had his operation working in New York City, which is basically you don't have to like each other, but you need to get along enough to make everything work. Try to keep it clean, try to keep it fair, let the dice roll.
So are there different galleries for the different mobs, or how do you have the museum organized?
Yeah, we drift in from there. We drift into Madden because he was so important to Hot Springs. We drift from the Power Brokers Gallery into Madden. There's a lot of his artifacts from his life. Then we go into Capone, which is digressing a little bit time-wise because Capone went to prison in 31. Madden didn't really come here till 32. But Ralph Capone and Madden were best friends. I mean, for a long, well, to the day Madden died. A lot of historians say that the reason Capone went to work for Torrio to begin with is because he had no future in New York, because Madden owned everything, ran everything. There was just no future, you know. But then you go from Capone into the baseball gallery. We explain how Billy Bob did that video for us with Larry Foley. They explain how it became an attraction for the mob and everybody else that came here. And then we go into the Outlaw Gallery, which we show. There's letters from Pretty Boy Floyd and from snitches and who spotted these people that are written directly to Hoover on the walls. And so we explain the story of why they came here. And then we drift probably from the 30s, what I call the outlaw years, on up into the 40s, 50s, and 60s, which is the New York mob coming down here, wanting to move down here, even up the point of Costello was asked to run the gambling machine here, basically. So which he refused. He just didn't want to get back in business. And then, of course, we drift into the casino gallery where we've got old machines from the clubs and slots and, you know, craps tables and blackjack table and roulette table. And
you had big-time gangsters from New York and from Chicago who wanted to set up operations here. Were they surprised at how strong the local control was that kept them out?
I think they already knew it when they came down. Now, Giancana made a run at it in 63, but Madden pretty much convinced him to go elsewhere. You know, at the same time, we had the New York mob here. We also had black gangsters. Ted Rowe, supposedly, according to Giancana's own book, he planned Ted Rowe's assassination here. He ran the policy wheels in Chicago, the numbers racket. The Jones brothers, Bumpy Johnson, you know, those guys were all here, mostly hanging out over on Broadway, because they call that Black Broadway, the National Baptist Hotel. They got along with, you know, probably better than the rest of the country did. Blacks and whites did, except for a few minor mishaps between hillbillies and black folks. But for the biggest part, they all got along here just like the rest of the culture seemed to get mold themselves into the fabric of Hot Springs.
Sure, it was unusual in the country, but there was really an African-American economy in Hot Springs that a lot of cities didn't have.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Malvern Avenue had four or five clubs of its own. A lot of our historians here, and one's the case, Orville Allbritton, delivered papers to the Cameo Club and the Atmosphere Club and knew some of these black entrepreneurs that ran these clubs. And they weren't coming down here dressed shabby. I mean, they were million-dollar earners.
So what does your research tell in terms of the story of how gambling came to an end here during the Rockefeller administration?
Well, the best I can read from a lot of different angles is that Rockefeller's brother was running for president, Nelson Rockefeller. And Rockefeller had been to visit his brother not too long before he decided to close gambling. Although there was a lot of clergy that were on his doorstep when he got elected, said, you got to clean this mess up. And he agreed to do that, and they voted for him. And so he might have been compelled to do that, but Rockefeller had his own little problems, mostly drinking. And his brother David, his younger brother David, owned a casino in Havana, so he wasn't totally against gambling. He just didn't need the payoff like the rest of the governors enjoyed. But I think he probably just decided that, you know, he would answer the call of these social folks and the clergy that wanted to clean up Hot Springs. So he hired Lynn Davis out of L.A. He was in robbery and homicide. He had been born in Texarkana and had lived there as a young man. So he's technically an Arkansan, which you had to be to run the state police back then. And he brought him back over here. He didn't think he would have any connection, so he wouldn't mind just going doing what he was told. And he did, but oddly enough, he was the only one ever arrested for it because he refused to tell a grand jury who his informants were here. And they put him in jail, and Rockefeller's lawyers got him out.
Talking about Lynn Davis.
Lynn Davis, Colonel Lynn Davis.
Was Davis Rockefeller's enforcer?
Yeah, he was. He said he would close it up. So he came down here, and he didn't take any money, and he didn't arrest anybody. He just kind of tried to explain to them, you know, we're shutting this down. It's it. And in talking to children of and grandchildren of some of the club owners, I'm not so sure they weren't kind of ready. Not to be shut down necessarily,
but it was
a good way out for him.
But there had to be some pushback.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Lynn Davis said he had probably six contracts on him, but they were all just, you know, there weren't any New York contracts on him. Now, you know, he captured some of the slot machines and turned them over to the Hot Springs police, but a couple of weeks later, everybody was back in business and he had to kind of come clean it up again. But essentially, that first night is what everybody calls the shutdown.
Was it a series of raids that were simultaneous?
Yeah, everything happened at the same time. He called the judge and said, I'm down here on Bridge Street, at the Bridge Street Club, and we're here to shut down Hot Springs. I've got search warrants for all the clubs. And the judge said, well, meet me at my office in the morning. He said, well, that'd be fine. I'll just wait right here. And we've got troopers that have taken over every club. So you just let me know. And he said, I'll be down in 5 minutes. And that was that.
So the judge came and signed the warrants, or they had warrants from somewhere else?
No, he came and signed them. Yeah. So, you know, I just think that whole story is so remarkable that he had the cojones to actually come in here and do that. And I think it would have been a little harder to do had not some of those people kind of been ready for it. Because, I mean, you can only, I would think, stay in that business so long. And it's rough, it's nasty, and, you know, there's a lot of people to pay off, and, you know, be a bookkeeping nightmare.
The world will always welcome lovers as time goes by.
My thanks to Robert for his time. He's also a member of the Garland County Historical Society, and Robert serves on the board of directors of the Arkansas Travel Council. He's working on another book to be released soon. on to things you can do over the next few weeks, my weekly visit with Jennifer Bailey. So with Jennifer Bailey from our sister station, 105.9 KLAZ, lots of things to do in the days ahead. The 8th Annual Fishing Challenge is just about to wrap up, Jennifer. It ends in July. The way this works is the Visit Hot Springs folks have tagged lots of fish out there. There are many remaining. If you get a tagged fish, call the phone number on it. They bring you money. Yes.
I'm a big fan. I'd fish more if there was more money involved.
Here's the deal. If you catch one that's tagged, don't throw it back. Good tip.
I never throw anything back that has to do with money, Neil. There's events coming up at Garvin Woodland Gardens. Through August 10th, they have a series of photo walks. Now, it doesn't matter if you have a sophisticated, fancy schmancy camera or just a smartphone. There's a walk for you to learn to take better pictures. So reach out to Garvin Gardens for more information on these photo walks. And it's free for members and only a $15 charge for non-members. But remember, you do need to register, so give them a call.
July 27th and the 28th, South Hot Springs Lions Club is having their annual gun and knife show at the Convention Center. This is a buy-sell trade-browse show. The money that they raise helps the Lions with their programs for the seeing impaired, and yes, all the federal laws will be observed.
Pocket Theater is presenting the musical Chicago starting August 2nd. I love going to see shows at the Pocket Theater. They do such an incredible job for a local theater.
And I love Chicago. That's a great musical.
It really is. And I know about some of the people who are starring in this one. It's going to be fantastic. Go to pockettheater.com for exact show times and dates. Tickets are only $20 for adults.
We have a great baseball heritage here, as we've talked about in previous podcasts. Well, August 1st from 5 to 8 p.m., Legends for Youth Free Baseball Clinic. So if you have a young baseball player, boys or girls, ages 6 to 16 only, they get to play with major league players who come to help with that. The web address is too long for me to put here, so just Google Legends for Youth Hot Springs and you'll find it. It's limited to 200 players, so register early.
August 2nd is the first Friday of the month, and that means the Gallery Walk downtown, a 25-year tradition. I remember going on the very first Gallery Walk.
So someone must have drugged you.
Yeah. I was in a stroller.
Let's just say, absolutely.
Yeah,
walking.
Yeah, we'll go with that one. Galleries stay open late that night. Some even serve beverages and snacks. You can enjoy all kinds of incredible art along beautiful Central Avenue in downtown. Also, on August 4th, it's the Reaching for the Stars vocal competition at the historic Malco Theater. It's a benefit to help the Recovery Point Ministry.
All right, here's a big deal. Comes up in August from the 9th to the 11th. The FLW's Forest Wood Cup back on Lake Hamilton this year. It's the best in pro anglers from around the world. 53 of them competing for, get this, $300,000. Plus, you can go to the giant fishing show at the Convention Center. All wraps up with the final weigh-in on Sunday the 11th, and just before the weigh-in, a free concert with country music star Trace Atkins.
Sounds like a blast.
It's a huge show. If you care anything about fishing, even a little bit, you don't want to miss this.
It's a lot of fun for everyone, absolutely. Other things to consider, there's lots of wonderful restaurants all around Hot Springs. I've made it my goal to try every single one within the next year.
Good for you.
Yeah, I don't think a diet's probably a good idea with that goal.
Not simultaneously.
No, not so much. You can also get out of the heat with a trip to the Oaklawn Casino. Always a good idea.
And of course, there are plenty of concerts and shows, but all with paid admission. Magic Springs has concerts on Saturday night. The concert's free, but you have to have a ticket to get into Magic Springs. Then there's the Hot Springs Bathhouse Theater. They're doing musicals and magic. And then Maxwell Blades Theater of Magic is open as well. He was on the podcast last week. He's a blast.
I just absolutely love Max. Love all this great stuff in Hot Springs.
Thanks, Jennifer. Each week we spend a few minutes talking about water levels and flows with Kimberly Bogart from Entergy Hydro Operations. She couldn't be with us this week, but did send along these notes for you. So you'll recall there was a lot of rainfall in our area, the remnants of Tropical Storm Barry. That allowed for a lot of water for the dam system to use to produce energy. Now what that means is an increase in the amount of green energy that they can produce to support the grid, but also additional water available for recreational flows below Remmel Dam. To help pass the water, flows throughout the weekdays, Monday through Friday, from Remmel, will be about 4,000 CFS, that's cubic feet per second. That's the recreational level, until 4 a.m. this coming Saturday morning, when the flow will be reduced to the minimum flow for this time period for a couple of hundred CFS. That reduced flow in the morning should open up the opportunity for you to get in some good fishing in the downstream sides of the dams. On Saturday, though, the flows will kick back in at 8 a.m. for a special release. That's extra hours for you floaters out there. The Central Arkansas chapter of the Arkansas Canoe Club is hosting their Surf and Turf event down in Rockport. You can find out more about that event with the Arkansas Canoe Club by checking out their Facebook page or going to their website. That's ArkansasCanoeClub.com. Recreational flows on Sundays will begin at 10 a.m., as had been the norm in the last few weeks. So if you're not headed out to find all the incredible waterfalls we have in Arkansas from the rain associated with Barry, then they suggest you come out to Malvern, enjoy a day on the river, and remember to bring your life jackets because they float when you don't. So my thanks to Kimberly Bogart, to Jennifer Bailey, and Robert Raines at the Gangster Museum. In the coming weeks, we'll talk about fishing on Lake Hamilton. You'll also hear in coming weeks from Louis Sella, the fourth generation of Sellas to oversee Oak Lawn Park, and he's overseeing the biggest change in Oak Lawn's rich history. Both of those episodes coming up in future weeks. So again, thanks for listening. Thanks for following us on Twitter at HSThisWeek. And we hope you'll not only subscribe to this podcast, but share it with your friends as well. We also hope you'll enjoy Hot Springs as much as we do.